So we're holding today in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. We are holding on Daf Kuf Beit, and we're right at the Halakha Mishnah. Hazorek v'nizkar me'achar sheyatzta miyado. So here we get into another question, which is going to wind up some of our issues of Hazorek. And is going to also make it pretty clear to us the important differences, which we haven't taken into consideration yet, between the act of Zrika and the act of Havora. And you have to think about this for a moment, because we never really thought so much about it. It just was the question how you were going to achieve the Hotzah, you know, whether it was with carrying it along or whether it was imparting force to it at the beginning. But what we neglected to take into consideration was a very important additional element, which is that when you throw something, at what point are you doing the malach of the Hotzah? At the beginning. So in other words, it's true that until the Hotzah is completed, and it went through the Arab Amos Pushos Rabim, assuming that's the situation, and then was Nach, it's true that there wouldn't have been a Hotzah, but the act of the Hotzah was completed instantly. It was completed instantly. Really, as far as you're concerned. When you're talking about a mavir and you're carrying, so then it's a sort of a slow process. Does this make any difference? It turns out it makes a major difference. And that's what our Mishnah introduces, yet another element that we never took into consideration. It's amazing how many of these hidden elements are there. And we're going to see now what nafkamina would make. So, says the Mishnah, consider a situation where somebody throws something, and then he remembers right after he threw it, oh my gosh, it was Shabbos. Now, what happens then? Mishnah seems to say, and we're going to have problems with how we understand the Mishnah. Mishnah seems to say that if kalta acher, if somebody jumps up and catches that ball, and he wasn't there in the beginning, or kalta kelev, a doggy jumps up and grabs the ball, or he doesn't even have to jump up if the ball lands there because the kelev doesn't have a mokum choshev, and a man's hand is considered to be a mokum choshev because he's achshavei, but a kelev's mouth is not considered to be a mokum arba al arba, so it was no manocha, or it gets burned up on its way before it lands. He would be potter. Now that's mashma. If this is all one statement, gentlemen, that's mashma, that the fact that he remembered after he let go of that ball does not make any difference. It's too late to remember now, because you already threw the ball. The same thing is true. Zorak lasot chabura. Somebody throws a stone. Not in Arba Amos Pushos Rabim. It's in his own backyard. There's a cat in his backyard. He throws the stone at the cat, and he's sick and tired of this cat eating his chickens. So he's trying to really wound that cat. Or he's throwing it at his neighbor who's stealing his chickens. But in any event, he wants to create a chabura on Shabbos. But this has nothing to do with Hotzah. And he remembers, oh my gosh, it's Shabbos. Before the Chabura was done, he would be Patur. Well, that was without any considerations of somebody else jumping up or whatever, right? So the guy threw it, and then he remembered. What difference does it make if he remembered? He already did the Isser, right? So why would he be putter in that case from the Chatas? Well, Zaklal, the reason that he's putter is because wherever there's a chiyuv chatat, kol chayavei chataot, enan chayavim achetei techilatan v'sofan shigaga. You need to be in a state of not knowing that you were doing that iser from the beginning till the end of the iser. Sorry, in the beginning you didn't know, in the end the Isser comes about when you do know, then that's considered to be Tchilata Bishkaga and Sofan Zadon, or vice versa. If Tchilatan Zadon v'Sofan Shkaga, in either case, you would not be Chayev Achatas. When we say Zadon, we don't mean that you went out to do it b'Zadon. We mean that you're fully aware of what's happening at the time that it's taking place. So then, if it would be that way, in any other case, you would be potter ach te tchilatan visofan shigaga. So this Mishnah is really terribly confusing. Rabbeinu HaKadosh has done a brilliant job here of totally confusing us by throwing in all kinds of different elements and not letting us know which one of the elements is the central point. Let's examine it for a moment so that we can get the Gemara clear in our heads, because obviously these are the issues that the Gemara is going to have to figure out. We started off with talking about Hazorek v'nizkar me'achar she'yatzta b'yado. Now that sounds exactly like the second case, where he threw it not in order to achieve a hotza'ah, he was in his backyard, but he threw it in order to achieve making a bruise on someone, right? And then he remembered. Okay, in the second case it says you're potter, ipso facto. Why? Because it wasn't entirely bishkaga. Yet in the first case in the Mishnah, it throws in these other factors. If he remembered le'achar she'yatzta b'yado, and it was then grabbed by somebody else, or by a doggy or whatever, then he would be putter. Mashma, that the realizing what you did alone is not going to make any nafkamina. Which is, of course, a contradiction. Does it or doesn't it? And then when we say the zeh haklal, is that going back on both of the cases? I mean, if it's going back on both of the cases, then it doesn't make any sense to say the part about the doggy got it, because that's nothing to do with the doggy got it. The reason I put it from Mechatas, the doggy got it is because I never completed the act, because it turned out that there was no hanacha, so there was no hotza'ah, right? In the second case, the guy did get the bruise made. There was no change. Nonetheless, the very fact that he knew about it potted him from Mechatas, so why are we talking all of a sudden about the doggy got it so that it never happened? Even if it did happen, it would be potter. So therefore, says the Gemara, look, let's analyze this. The first line in the Mishnah, what does it say? Hazorek v'nizkar me'achar she'yatzta miyado, if kol ta'acher, kol ta'kelev, oshen is for a potter. Okay, but suppose there would not have been a kol ta'kelev, suppose there would not have been a nisrafa, there would not have been a kol ta'acher, what would have been the din? Hanacha. Let's imagine that it had actually landed, okay? Which is the same as the second case, it actually made the chabura. So if it actually landed, so you're telling me you're chayev. I don't understand. Why are you chayev? You said that the guy realized it was Shabbos after he had released the thing from his hand. And now you're telling me he would be chayev. But doesn't it say in the Mishnah, how in the world can he be chayev? He knows that it was Shabbos. And at that point, he's putter, even if the malacha would have been achieved. Amrav Kana. Look, there's got to be two different things over here. The Seifa that was talking about needing to be Tchilatan V'Sofan Shkaga, that case was different than the first case. We're going to have to understand there was two different cases. And actually, in the case where it makes a difference, whether you become a Shogeg at the end of the act, is only nogea where you could have done something about the act, right? So let's imagine a case where, I mean, it does say you threw it, and if you threw it, it would seem to be it's out of your hands, literally, and therefore it wouldn't make any difference. The case that we would be talking about is indeed where you threw it, but it was attached still by a string to your hand. So it's talking about over there a very common case of a lakta umatna. The case of a lakta is where they would used to balance weights on the back of a donkey. So you would have one weight on one side, one weight on the other side, and they would balance each other out in order to prevent the falling. And then what you would do is you would clip together the two sides, and the clip had on it an extended string that would allow you to be able to lift it off and so on. So what we're talking about over here is you threw something, you took it off of the chamor, it was still attached by the clips, you were holding the string and you threw it four amas in Rishus HaRabba, but you could have stopped it by pulling back on the string. And you remembered in the course of its going that it was Shabbos. Then it makes sense, says Rav Kahana, to say that it makes a difference if you knew or you didn't know, because, I mean, if you weren't holding onto the string, what difference does it make? You could not have done a darn thing about it. You already had completed your act, and therefore, it wouldn't have mattered. So in other words, where do we say that it needs to be shogeg from beginning to end? That's dafka, where when you remember, you could have done something about it, and therefore you would be potter because the last part of your act was not done with your shogeg. And because of that, we view it as being two separate things. But if you threw something and you're not holding on to it, and there's nothing you could have done anymore, who cares if you remember? What are you supposed to do about the fact that you remember? You threw it when it was Shabbos. It was shogeg on Shabbos. You say, oh my God, it's going to be landing any minute now. So what? What are you going to do about it? Your entire maaser was completed by shogeg. And therefore, when it says in the end that you have to be b'shogeg at the end, that's where it makes a difference. Masha'en Kein, the whole point of the Reisha is to tell him, is that if you threw it and you were not holding a string, then the only way that you would be potter is if it never finished, because the doggy ate it up on the way. But if it had finished, the fact that you would have been niskar would not have made any difference. That's how I suggest reading the Mishnah, says Rav Kahana. Ask the Gemara, lakta umatna cannot be the case for a very simple reason. Suppose you throw something with a string attached. Would you be chayev? No. Because remember, we had all along that if any part of the hotzah is still in your hand or still in the other rishus, you'd be putter. So if this is the case, if you're putter, then why in the world are you telling me I don't need a doggy to get it? Even if the doggy didn't get it, I wouldn't have been chayev. Because that was called Ogdo B'yado. It says Rav Kahana, you're right, but it's not talking about throwing it for Hotzah. It's talking about throwing it in order to make a Chabura. Throwing it in order to make a Chabura, that's the next case, Hazorek Lasot Chabura. Obviously, if I throw it to make a Chabura, it doesn't make any difference whether I got the thing in my hand or not vis-a-vis Hotzah, because there's no Isra Hotzah. But what is the point of throwing it in order to make a Chabura if I have a beferisha case of being Zorek La'asot Chabura? So obviously the first case can't be talking about the same case as the second case. Therefore, says Rabbah, forget about this complicated thing about holding a string in your hand. Maybe there's two different cases. What we're talking about over here is a case of ma'avir. Ma'avir is where I'm holding it. So when it says Zaklal, it's adding a new case to the Mishnah. The first case is a case where I throw it. So it says Hazorek. Then it talks about the case of the Zaklal. That is referring specifically to a case where I did not throw it, and I carried it. And since I carried it, I could have stopped in the middle, and it makes all the difference in the world if I was aware of what I was doing or not. And therefore, since I continued walking, then there's no way that this was all one act of shogeg. And because of that, I'm putter from mechatas. And that's the case of the Zaklal and Ein Achinami. If I threw it, the entire act of Chilul Shabbos was achieved at the moment that I threw it, and therefore my remembering at the end wouldn't have made any nafkamina. That's how to read the Mishnah. So the Gemara is very unlikely. I mean, the Mishnah lists two cases of Hazorek. Either case one, Hazorek to make a Havara on Shabbos of Arba Amos. Case number two is Havara in order to throw a stone at the cat. Both of them are Hazorek. Now you're telling me that the Zaklal is not referring back to the cases of Zorek? And all of a sudden we change things to read a Ma'avir? The Zaklal is going back on a case of Hazorek. Why would you say Zaklal on something that you haven't even discussed? So that doesn't make sense either. Because after all, it says Zaklal Azrika Katani. He's going back on that case of Zrika itself. Therefore, Rava changes his mind. Rava says, you know what? What created the whole problem over here? The fact that you read the first line of the Mishnah as Hazorek, he remembers, and then the doggy eats it, right? No, not true. That's not the right way to read the Mishnah. The right way to read the Mishnah is Hazorek and you remembered. Case A. That case alone is enough to make you potter from a chatas. That's the point, that you would be potter just because you remembered is absolutely true, even though you were zorek and even though you couldn't stop it. The fact is that by the time the malacha was finished, you were aware of the fact that it was Shabbos, and therefore there would be no chiyuv. And the way to read the Mishnah is that it's giving us four possible reasons to be potter. Reason one would be, you remembered. Reason two would be, somebody jumped up and grabbed it, and therefore it wasn't in the place that it was going to be. Number three would be, a doggy catches it, and his mouth is not chashuv amokum arba, and therefore it's not considered to be hanocha. And number four would be, it would burned up, and therefore there was no hanocha. So it all ties in. We were wrong to make this difference. And when we continue on Zaklal is coming to tell me the halacha. So according to this, even if you couldn't have taken it back, for some reason we would consider it now a completely different halacha. In other words, and now let me point out to you what this gets us involved in. The point of remembering something because of the fact that it's a not considered to be a one maisa from the beginning until the end. We thought that that was because you didn't do the maisa that was mechayev you in a state of shogeg. Now we're saying that's not true. Even if you did the state, the maisa, in a state of shogeg, it would be still potter. And what we're talking about, why would that be true, even though you remembered in the middle, if you did it, you should be potter from the beginning? Because since the Torah talks about the maisa bishgaga, so even though your act is not an act of mazid, but the fact that the melacha wasn't a melacha bishogeg means that it's not a real shogeg, an unbelievable chiddush. So the shogeg in the Torah, up until now, remember, we understood the whole point of shogeg is that the Torah is being mechayev you on what you knew. And that's the reason why there was a difference between if you forgot it was Shabbos, you forgot the melacha, would you be chayev on all of the melachas for one on Shabbos? Well, you only forgot one thing because you forgot it was Shabbos. If you forgot the melachas, you're chayev on every single one of them because you forgot the melachas. That seems to be an implication that it all has to do with your awareness of the act. Now Rava is saying, no, actually, you would be potter no matter what. And the reason is because Rav Ashi says, I don't think that we should actually change this and make the first case four separate cases. I think what we should do is we should say like this. We should look at the Mishnah as if it was missing a piece. So read it the way that it is. Okay. Hazorek v'nizkar mi'achash yatz tabiyot. And then after you remembered, the only reason that you would be potter was because, same way we understood originally, Kol Tacher, Kol Takelev, Osha Nisr, for all of these cases, then you would be putter, which implies that, but if the doggy didn't get it, then you would be chayev, even though you had forgotten, right? Okay, so then let me explain this. Bameh Devarim Amurim. When do we say that if you had forgotten it, you would be chayev unless the doggy got it? That's talking about where you were chozer v'shocheach. I'm putting in a whole new piece over here. The Mishnah says you remember that it was Shabbos. And it nonetheless says, even though you remembered it was Shabbos, you're still going to be chayev. Why? Because you already threw it. Not really. You have to put in these words. When do we say that it already was enough to be mechayev you if it hadn't been for that doggy? That's only talking about a case where you forgot again that it was Shabbos before it landed. So then you have tchilato v'sofo bishkaga. Avolo chazar v'shachach. If you didn't forget again, then you would be potter even if it did land. Why? Because by the time it landed, you were amazed, not a shogeg. And kol chayavecha ta'ot inat chayavim achtei tchilatan v'sofan shkaga. That's the pshat. Now, what he has done for us, Rav Ashi, is that although he didn't change the dinim that Rava brought up, he changed it by how he fits it into the Mishnah in a crucial way. Because he brought up another issue. The other issue is, what is your status in the middle? The Mishnah says, Tchilatan v'sofan b'shkaga. Okay, how about if you remembered, and then you forgot again? So then the beginning would be b'shkaga, and the end would be b'shkaga, right? The fact that you knew in the middle, does that make a difference? Well, Does it? How about as far as the issue of yesh yediyah in the middle, ruining the act? Huh? So what he's done is brought up a whole, he's opened a whole Pandora's box in the way that he's defined the Mishnah. And this leads us directly to the next piece. Okay, so go over again outside what it is that we've done. We've got this weird Mishnah, which first says that even, seems to say that even though you forgot and then in the middle you suddenly, as it left your hand, you remembered, that would not potter you unless a doggy eats it up before it gets to Hanukkah. So that seems to be saying that remembering that it's Shabbos will not potter you if there's nothing you could do about it, only if something happened to it. The next case talks about where the same exact thing happens, except in this case, there's no issue of a long malacha. There's only one piece to this malacha, hitting the cat. Okay, you remembered that it was Shabbos before you hit the cat. It just says Hazorek, in this case, Viniskar, there's no other things that take place in between. And it says the same exact halacha, which seems to be repeating what it said in the beginning. Zorak la'asot chabura v'niskar patur. And then it says a general rule. The general rule makes a lot of sense in that last case, but no sense in the first case. The general rule is that if you were not in a state of forgetfulness, both at the beginning and at the end, you would not be chayav achata. So you can easily see our problems with the Mishnah. So what we could, we attempted to do all kinds of different things. So we started to explain it that maybe there would be two different cases. The only time that it would make a difference if you remembered after it leaves your hand is where you could stop it. You were holding onto it with a string. You were walking it across. But if you throw something, there's nothing you can do about it. And then the moment that you remembered, it wouldn't make any difference. Now, that's problematic in the case of throwing a rock at a cat, right? Are we going to suggest that the rock at the cat is talking about a case where you're holding onto it with a string? I mean, so then why would we need two cases to tell us the same thing? So at that point, at the end, we realize that what we're going to have to do is bite the bullet. And we're going to have to say one of two possibilities. Either that the Reisha was talking about four separate Peturim. You would be potter because you remembered. Even though it left my hand and there's nothing I could do? Yes. It's a gzeres hakosov that in order to be chayav achatas, you need, in fact, to be in a state of forgetfulness. And it doesn't matter whether you could have done anything about it or not. Or the other reason, if you didn't remember, was because the hanukkah wasn't done properly for whatever reason. Doggy, person, fire, whatever. Approach number two was changing the Mishnah to be including this idea of chazar v'shachach. And therefore, where did the Mishnah say that if you forgot that you would still be chayav unless the doggy ate it? That would only be where you subsequently remembered by the time that it landed. But if you didn't subsequently remember, you would have been putter. Okay, that was our two possibilities. So, Zeaklal says, the Gemara kol chayavecha ta'ot itmar. And this leads to the question of Yediyah l'chatzi shiur, which has been hidden underneath the whole time and finally has been forced out into the open by Rav Ashi and the Zeaklal. So, Zeaklal kol chayavecha ta'ot itmar. Shtei amot b'shogeg, shtei amot b'mezit, shtei amot b'shogeg. Let's imagine a case like this. A guy throws something, it travels to amot, he suddenly remembers, oh my God, isn't it Shabbos? And then it travels another Shteyamot, and the guy forgets it's Shabbos. Meanwhile, he's watching TV. Meanwhile, it travels another two Amot, and that he did again, the Bishogeg. So we have Shteyamot Bishogeg, Shteyamot B'mezit, Shteyamot Bishogeg. Rabba says you'd be Potter in that case. Rava says you'd be Chayev in that case. Now, that case has introduced this new idea of knowing something in the middle. So let's see whether there's really a machlokas between Rabba and Rava. It seems to be a heck of a machlokas. Let's see what they're arguing about. So Rabba Omar Patur, why are you Patur? My first guess is that the reason you're Patur is because there is a yediyah in the middle. And a yediyah in the middle is separating two parts of an action and makes it impossible for you to be chayiv. Okay. Is that true? Isn't that a machlokas? Where is it a machlokas? It's a big machlokas between Rabbi Gamliel and the Rabbana. A guy is writing two otiyot. So he wants to write the word shame, which is our favorite writing. He writes the first letter, b'shogeg. He then remembers it Shabbos. Are you chayev on one letter? No. You need to have a minimum of two letters. So when he remembers that at Shabbos it was a chatzi shiur, when he goes ahead and he does the second letter, does that separate between the two acts, or is it all considered to be one act of Chilul Shabbos? So Rabbi Gamliel says it's all one act because there's no such thing as a Yediyah L'Chatzi Shiur. You never knew that you did a Chilul Shabbos because you didn't do a Chilul Shabbos because it wasn't a Chilul Shabbos until you did both. The Rabbanan say, Yesh Yediyah L'Chatzi Shiur. So, says Rabbi, I don't think it's Nogea that Machlokas. Why? Because even according to Rabbi Gamliel, who says that a Yediyah L'Chatzi Shiur is irrelevant, that is talking about a case where at the time that you did the second of the two letters, you were once again b'shogeg, right? How about over here? Remember that now that we're focusing on the fact of the hotza'ah, and we're saying that the shear of a hotza'ah is what needs to be done, with whether or not you threw it or you carried it, wouldn't make any nafkamina. You need to know what it is that you're doing, which is weird. At the time that you finished the hotza'ah, and when I say finished the hotza'ah, I'm saying the second two amot, what was your state of mind? Shogeg or mazid? Your state of mind was you knew it was Shabbos, and therefore it's mazid. When it continues moving another two amot, I say that in this case, even Rabbi Gamliel would be mazid, that over here, the four amot was completed at the time that you were in a state of amazed. Correct? Well, possibly. Are we talking about a guy who threw it, or are we talking about a guy who carried it? Asks the Gemara. B'mai. If we're talking about a zoreik, so then the zoreik, it shouldn't make any nafkamina. I'll tell you why. Because Yediyah L'Chatzi Shiur has to do with whether, as you continue to do what you were doing, it's mechubar to what it was that you originally did. Well, I mean, if you threw it, it has nothing to do with what your state of mind is vis-a-vis the Maisa. The nafkamina of whether you know or not would only be in terms of the halacha of Tchilaso V'Sofo B'Shogeg. So therefore, I say, if we're talking about a Zorek, then it's Kulo B'Shogeg. It must be that we're talking about a ma'avir. Therefore, if I'm walking six amos in the Rishus HaRabim, I pick it up and I continue to walk, and I remembered at the end of two amot that it is Shabbos. I don't stop walking, even though I could stop walking, and I continue to walk another two amot, and now I forget it's Shabbos, and continue to walk and put it down at the end of the six amos. So in that case, what I'm saying is, I hold that Rabbi Gamliel would be made that since at the time that I hit the four amos level, and I could have at that time stopped, and at that point I would have been a mazid, so then there Rabbi Gamliel is made that when I'm gamer, the malacha over here, I was amazed, and I was not in a state of shogeg. Rabbah, on the other hand, says you're chayev, not because he disagrees with Rava, but because he's talking about a different case. And he says, I want to bring out to you the fact that even the Rabbanan who holds yesh yediyah l'chatzi shiur, that would only be in the case where you're writing two letters. And they say, if you remembered in the middle that you wrote one letter and you continue to write the second letter, you're not going to be chayev because it's not all one act. But that's because you could stop. But in this case, the moment it left your hand, there's nothing you can do about it. Therefore, they would never have said, yesh yediyah l'chatzi shiur. Now, what do you think we're talking about over here? If we're talking about the ma'avir, if you're carrying it, the six amos, what do you mean? It's not in your hands. It is in your hands. You could have stopped walking. We must be talking about the case of Zorek, which means that Rabba and Rava were talking about two completely different cases. And what they're trying to bring out is that this additional point in the Mishnah, where we're talking about that you need to have the Tchila B'Shogeg and the Sofa B'Shogeg, the question of whether I can read into that a nafkamina of whether the middle was bemazed is only nogea the question of yesh yadil lechatzi shir. Therefore, you would always need to be machalic in what the case was. If it's a case of Zorek, then you couldn't have done anything about it at all, so who cares? The only reason it would be important to know is whether the act started and completed b'shogeg. That's gzeirat ha-katuv, and we're saying now it has to be in the same state in order for you to be chayav the chatas. And there's absolutely no relationship to the case of Zorek to the question of yesh yedia b'chatzi shir, because there's nothing I could do about it anyway. So my act was completed. What comes out from this extremely complex interrelationship, gentlemen, is something that is brought out beautifully in this machlokas, not a non-machlokas, but in the discussion of two separate cases of Rabba and Rava. Namely, that where we're talking about your act and not the malacha, the only thing that is significant is what your mind is about at the time, the instant that you're doing the act. Therefore, if you are a ma'avir, you're doing the act the entire time. And in that case, if you knew about what you were doing in the middle, it is extremely important because it may split your act into two parts if you hold yesh yedia lechatzi shir. On the other hand, if we're talking about a case of Zorek, nobody would suggest, and it would have nothing to do with the question of yesh yedia lechatzi shir or not. Nobody would suggest it had something to do with it. All that would be nogea over there is this completely new question of where is a chiyav chatas on a completed action of a malacha on Shabbos, only where the malacha was done at the beginning b'shogeg and was completed b'shogeg. It has nothing to do with whether you could have done anything about it or not, or whether we're separating it into two separate acts. That's not why you're parted from the chatas, because you didn't have a shear of the act. You're parted from the chatas for a completely different reason, because it was not considered to be kula b'shogeg since it wasn't sofa b'shogeg. As far as your knowledge in between, who cares? Was there anything you could have done about it? No. So was the act begun and ended b'shogeg? Yes. So therefore, we see here very clearly the difference between the Zorek case, which we always took to be nothing but a way of doing things logistically different than a Mahavara, and it turns out it's much more than that. It concentrates the act of the Chilul into a split second, and nonetheless allows you to see the separation of the extended time of the Malacha, despite the fact that there was no extended time in the action. That is a brand new concept that we never really took into consideration. We tasted it at the beginning. If you remember, we had a guy, the case of a guy who put a piece of bread into the tanner to cook, and he had forgotten it was a Shabbos. Now the question is, he allowed to take it down in order to avoid the chiyav? So we did actually mention and think about this for a minute, or could somebody else take it down? Over there, the question was, he had completed his Chilul Shabbos, but the act wouldn't have been completed until a half an hour later when the bread was actually baked. But here we see it in terms of Hotzah itself, which is absolutely marvelous. Okay. Continues on the Gemara, just to analyze that first case of the mouth of the dog. Boom, 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 boom. So here is what gets us into this very strange mimer of Rabba. Rabba claims that if you threw something and it lands in the, now the word nacha is not very good over here. Tosfos says this is a very misleading word. So what it ought to say is with zorak lefi kelef or lefi kivshan. If you specifically wanted to throw something for your doggy to catch, right? So your dog is playing catch with a ball. You throw the ball, the doggy jumps and catches the ball. or you want to throw something into the pi tanur, and now it's going to be burnt up in the tanur, you are chayev, says Rabbah, for the landing. How could that be? Asked the Gemara. The Mishnah says the exact opposite. It says if the doggy got it, or if it was burnt up, you're putter. How could Rabbah go and say something against the Mishnah? Ah, because Hatam Dulo Mechavein, over there, he did not intend it to land in the dog's mouth. Over here, he did. Over there, he did not intend it for it to be burnt up, but over here, he intended to throw it into the stove. And his very intent is Machshiv that Mokum to be the equivalent of a Mokum Arba or Arba for Hanacha. Omer of Baby Barabaye Afanana Mitanina. I can show you that that's true, because look, we have the Mishnah that says, Yesh ochel achila achat, this famous sugi in Kritut. You could do one act of eating, and you would be chayev four separate korbanot chatat and one korban asham. What would be the case? You are tamei betumas haguf, you eat chelev, which is kodesh, and it's also nosar, and it's also Yom Kippur, okay? So you weren't allowed to eat Kodesh Betumas Haguf. You took Chelev, which was roi for the Mizbeach. You ate it Betumas Haguf. And therefore, you were already over on Achilas Chelev, one Chatas. Achilas Kachim Betumas Haguf, two Chatos. The Chelev had been left over and it was Notar, three Chatos. It was Kodesh, and therefore your Chayev Me'ila, a Korban Me'ila is an Asham. That's an Asham Me'ilas. And to boot, it was Yom Kippur, and therefore you're chayev for eating on Yom Kippur. That's four chatos. So you really get a very efficient way of going to hell. You want to do it quickly. And Rebbe Meir says, well, wait a minute. I mean, if you really want to burn, you know, we can give you one additional thing that you can do wrong. And that is, afi maita shabbat votzio bepiv. How about if it's Shabbos? And he's walking along, chewing this thing. So then he's also going to be chayev on hotzah. Omrulos, I said to Rebbe Meir, we were talking about eating. What are you throwing in other things? What are you telling me the guy's juggling also on Shabbos? I mean, what does that have to do with eating? That's not part of our equation over here. Einu min hashem. We're talking about eating. Now, Rebbe Meir feels that the reason that this is included, as Tosis explains, is because we said before that if you're carrying something in your mouth and you swallow it, it was the same case as carrying ink in your pen and writing it down as you're walking on the kulmos, and that would be the hanacha once it touched the kulmos. So over here, once you swallowed it, that would be the hanacha. So basically, Titus Rebbe Meir, so that's for eating. In this case, the eating is a hotzah. So you would be chayev additionally for eating. Okay, but I ask you, why would he be chayev? And nobody seems to be worried about the fact that you're carrying this thing in your mouth. Why are you chayev for carrying something in your mouth? A mouth is an amokum arba al arba. So you see that the fact that you've decided that you wanted to carry it this way is considered to be giving it the chashivas of being a mokum a derech hotzah. So ein derech hotzah b'kach, elakivan de mechavein mechshav to mashvel emokom. Since you are mechaving to carry it this way, then that becomes the chashiva carrying. Hochanamik, even the komechavein, wouldn't that be true also about turning something that isn't a mokum arba into a mokum of arba, to which the Ripke Vager says, no, of course not. One has nothing to do with the other. It's crazy. What kind of raya is this? The fact that this is the derech of hotzah to somebody who wants to eat has nothing to do with this being machshavit as a mokum of arba al arba. Where would you come to that crazy conclusion? Problematic. Tzoruch iyun gadol. In any event, Hadron alach hazorek, says Sir Richard. Hadron alach hazorek, says Sir Richard. And so we move on to Perek Haboneh. Okay. Haboneh, kama yivneh v'chyeh chayav. How much do you have to build to be chayav? Now, why in the world are we talking about Haboneh? Says Tosfos, somebody's got to come up with a reason. I don't know. Tzorech liten tam, amai koni boneach zrika v'otzah. We finally got through all of our zrika v'otzah. Why are we talking about binyan? But remember that the way that we've understood it, it's a very simple equation. The first time that we got to the essence of the Mishkan, instead of the melachos that were done in the Mishkan, was in Hotzah. And when we finally got to the question of how the Mishkan is loaded and how the Mishkan is made and how the Mishkan is transported, because the essence of the Mishkan is the Hotzah. So the one thing that is the melacha, that is obviously the Binyan HaMishkan, is the Binyan HaMishkan. Okay, so the next thing that we would want to discuss would obviously be Boneh, because that is the thing that is about the all of the things that we're doing. We're only for the purpose of the Binyan HaMishkan. So naturally, we should discuss the concept of Boneh directly. There's a Tosfos Yontev who tries to explain this on the basis of our going backwards. So since we mentioned the last thing, which was the Hotzah, so then we went back to Makeh B'Patish, which was right before that. And since Makeh B'Patish is similar to Binyan, so anyway, I think this is a very straightforward explanation of what happened over here. So we go to Aboneh. Okay, what is the shear of Binyan? Well, the shear of Binyan is any little bit. Aboneh kosher, whatever little bit you build is going to be mechayev you on building. And that would be the same as somebody who is misatate. If you chisel out a stone, however you do it, says Rashi. You know, in Germany, they do it with these little fancy marks in the stone around these parts to try to make it smooth, but whatever it is. So whatever the social standard would be for getting a stone ready for binyan, or have makeh b'patish u'b'ma'atzad, somebody who strikes a blow, and it's the final strike. So he does that with either a hammer, a sledgehammer, somebody who makes a hole with a drill, he's kodeach, any little amount, koshu, he would be chayiv. Zekla, kol ha'oseh melacha, melachto mitkayemet, anybody who does a melacha, which is enough. In other words, he does not need to do anything else on it. It's mitkayem as it is b'Shabbat. He would be chayav as it is, even though it's the slightest amount. The slightest amount means that it's considered to be useful. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, af hamakeh bekurnas al hasadan b'sha'at melacha chayav. If a guy is working in a smithy shop, okay, and what he did is he was not banging on anything. He just took the hammer, and he bangs the hammer on the anvil. He would still be chayev, because that's the equivalent of the metakein melacha, and that is the equivalent of a makeh b'patish, even though he hasn't done a darn thing. And the Gemara is going to say, how can you possibly do a melacha if you're just banging the hammer against the anvil, not as part of the melacha? What's an afkamina if it's metakein melacha? What would that mean? The Gemara is going to discuss this. Now, when you say it's kol shehu, what can you use kol shehu for? Omer Rabbi Yirmiyah, well, I mean, let me give you an example of kol shehu. To say kol shehu in terms of an actual binyan, a guy wants to make a hole in the floor as a safe, okay? So he makes a little hole in his floor, buries a quarter in the hole, and he covers it with some ground now, okay? Is that binyan or not? I say if he would do it, latznia bo prototav, so then he's basically making a safe. So why isn't that binyan? Yeah, but wait a minute. If we're learning out binyan from the nature of binyan HaMishkan, how would this be equivalent to binyan HaMishkan? I don't get it. I mean, the whole this is the way we're understanding it. Now, Tosfos has got a whole different question. Why in the world would I need to find a shear in the Mishkan? I never went to find a shear in the Mishkan until now. So why do I need the kol shehu as a shear? But the way we're learning it, this is a totally different type of binyan. If we only find the binyan HaMishkan, how do we know that just the slightest thing that deals with a binyan is considered to be valuable? Where was such a thing done in the Mishkan? Well, okay, I'll show you in the Mishkan. Tofrei Yiriot, people that were working on sewing up those curtains for the Mishkan, maybe at night, they would need to make a little safe to store the needles in. So that's what they would do. They would make a little hole, put the needles in it. Abaye says they would never do that. The needles would rust, even in the midbar. Lo avdehachi. I'll tell you what it is. an oni would make a little tiny heating area, which is a tripod, lishpot ala kedera katana. The guy can't afford anything, so he makes a one-inch high kind of thing to get a little cup of coffee. Okay, where do we find such a thing in the Mishkan? Well, suppose these people ended up running out of dyed wool for making the Uriot of the Mishkan. They would do the same thing. They would make a little tripod. They would make a pitput of a kirakatana, and they would boil up a little bit of dye. Lishprot ala yorakatana, says Rav Acha bar Yaakov. That's ridiculous. In aniyut b'makom ashirut. Remember, the whole point of the Mishkan was, as Rashi says, everything was dye v'hoter. There was always enough. They never brought just enough because of this very issue. You're going to need enough to make certain that if anything didn't work out, you've got enough to be able to make up for it so that you never get to this type of situation of needing to die a little bit. And therefore, that never happened. Okay, let's try another case. Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, Ein aniyut b'makom ashirut. So what was his suggestion be? Ela shekein ba'al habayit sheyesh lo nekev v'birato. Let's say a guy has got a nice house, and that's called a bira, in which a small hole in the wall is very troublesome. And because of that, he would seal it up with a little bit of tiach, even though it's a tiny, tiny problem. I mean, who cares? A little hole in the wall. You still fix it up. Where was this done in the Mishkan? So let me tell you something. The krashim were prepared by Yaakov Avinu. There's nothing that you're not going to be able to replace a keresh. So you suppose a keresh had a tiny hole in it, in which the hole was bored by a darna. Remember, a darna we saw before was a type of bookworm kind of thing or a termite that ate a little hole in a keresh. So what would you do in order to seal that? You would be matif l'tocho avar v'sotmo. You would pour a little bit of lead into the hole. But what that means is that any little bit of things are part of the actual binyan, even if it's tiny. And therefore, when I talk about binyan on Mishkan, I have to talk a binyan, which is even a kol shehu. Omar Shmuel, ha-mitzadeh deta even. You know what? Binyan could be without using anything but dry stone walling. You know what dry stone walling is? You take a stone, you place it on the ground, you move it around in such a way that it's solid, you stuff some solid pieces of pebble or dirt under it to make sure it can't move, and that's the way you start your wall. And that alone you would be chayav for. Even if, but what did I do? All I did was put it down. That is binyan. Meitvei. How could that be if the Braita says, if you have two people doing binyan, one of them brings the stone and the other one brings the cement, the only one who's chayev is the one who brings the cement. But Shmuel says the guy who put down the stone would be chayev without cement. So what are you talking about? Says the Gemara, okay, read the next piece of the Braita and you'll see what I'm talking about, okay? V'latay mech'ema seifa, Rabbi Yossi Omer, even if you just picked up a stone, and you put it up on top of another row of stones, you would be chayev. Now, how do you explain that? Over there, not only is there no cement, there's not even mitzadeh. So now we're saying you have one part of the braita that's going even beyond what Shmuel said, and one part of the braita that's saying that Shmuel is not enough. Okay, so now you're going to have to explain the braita itself in order for it to make sense to you. Must be that there are three completely different stages in building walls. You have the lowest level, the middle, all the middle rows, and then the upper level. Okay, tata mitziyavi ila. The bottom row only needs setting down with a little bit of dirt that you put in it. That was Shmuel's case, and that was mitzadeh. The middle rows, they have to be cemented in. Okay, the upper row, since it's not going to be holding anything else, it doesn't have to be exactly even. The other rows needed cement in order to make sure you have an absolutely straight top. But the upper row, ba'anacha ba'alma, you could just put it in. So we've got three different dinim, one of Shmuel, one of the Tanakam in the Braita, and one of Reb Yossi in the Braita. The next thing that we had in the Mishnah was misatet. Misatet meant that you chiseled away on a stone, and somehow or other you would be chayev. And it says you would be chayev even on a kol shehu, which is like interesting. All of the opening things are called shahu. So what exactly would be the malacha of chiseling a stone exactly? That's not clear what we're talking about. I mean, obviously, if we would be, you know, taking something maybe out of the ground and turning it into a stone, I mean, but then it wouldn't, for building, then it wouldn't be called shahu. So what is the malacha? It's very important for us to know what the malacha is, remember, because if we cannot define properly what tolda it is, we've got an option. You can't tell somebody, give him hatra'ah on Shabbat, and say, don't do that because maybe you'll be over on Bona, or I don't know, maybe it's Makib Patish, or that's not called hatra'ah. So that's the first problem. Oh, we got Jeff back, Baruch Hashem. He's been missing for way too long. And you can't do that because he won't be chayev. So we need to know what it is in order to give hatra'ah. That's number one. And number two, obviously it's important because the way that we ended up coming out, paskening l'halacha, is that if you do a tolda b'mokom av, then you're not chayev. So suppose you would do a tolda and you would do one of the avot, which this tolda might be under, it might not be. We'll make an afkamina, how many korbanot chatat you're supposed to bring, right? So it's essential for us, even if we don't have any doubt about it's being included within the malachot, it's essential for us to get a precise definition of which tolda. And so that forces us to zero in on the differences sometimes between things that are quite similar. So Rav Amar Mishum Boneh. Rav holds that anything that is part of the process of building is a chiyuv of building. Where Shmuel says, well, there's no such thing as being part of a process. It has to actually achieve an actual part of the binyan. And therefore, over here, the reason that you would be chayev would be because of makeh bepatish and only because of makeh bepatish. That explains why it would be even the slightest amount. Now, you'll ask, well, I mean, it's not makeh bepatish. I understand if I've got a stone that's maybe a meter wide. So, I mean, it may take me 10,000 bangs of the patish. Have you ever watched these Arabs sitting there doing the situt of the avanim and the rova that they're going to put down on the road and so on? I mean, it takes hours just to get like one of them into place. So where is the makeh bepatish? Ah, says Rashi, the makeh bepatish is every single hammer blow. How is that possible? Because the point is that there is no particular size that's considered to be the Evan. Every makeh bepatish that you do, says Shmuel, is the last thing you're going to have to do to this part of the stone. And therefore, it's the final stage of what needs to be done here. And being as the entire idea of the situt, the final situt, is the final preparation. Each part of it is the makeh bepatish on its piece. Fine. The next case that we have, which is similar, is osa nekev belul shel tarnagolim. So you've got a chicken coop. Now this chicken coop is completely sealed up. It's not like the coops that are made nowadays where there's sort of lattice work, so they're full of openings. These things were basically boxes that you would put the chickens into. Now, you would need to have a chimney-like kind of thing to allow all of the stale, smelly air come out of there. You're going to kill the chickens. So they would make a hole at the top of the chicken coop. So, osa nekev belul shel tarnagolim. What would you be chayev there? Rav says, look, that's binyan. Because, I mean, you do the same thing in any type of building. You're going to need to have ventilation. And this is considered to be ventilation. Whereas Shmuel says, this is not mental ventilation. This is allowing smells out. Doesn't really, this is how Tosfos understands it. Ventilation, in terms of the type of petach that you would be making in a building, always has to be a petach lahachnis v'lahotzi. And we're going to see more of this later on in the Masechet. It's got to go in both directions. And over here, my essential point is to allow all of the stale and smelly air out. And therefore, I don't see this as being a normal building. Therefore, it would be makeh bepatish. It's the last step that makes this chicken coop usable. And because of that, it would be chayev for any little bit as makeh bepatish is. How about another case? The case of Ayel Shufta Bekupina Demara. So the Kupina Demara is a, like on a sponge stick, right? On a sponge, not on the stick, rather, on the sponge rubber piece what you've got over there always is this little piece sticking out of plastic that you put the handle into. Now, nowadays, of course, the handles will screw in. But up until fairly recently, 10, 20 years ago, there would be a hole in the piece that was sticking out, and you would put a nail through it in order to hold in the handle. That hole is what is the equivalent here, where you put something into a hole that you hold the handle into by banging a nail through it or putting some type of peg into it that keeps it. So that's the aisle shufta. The shufta is the peg that you put into the kupina de mara, into that holder for the handle. And what will be the din over there? So Rav says, well, there too, you're chayav mishum binyan. Shmuel says, that's not binyan. Now, of course, the overall issue over here, which is there such a thing as binyan bekelim? Tosis points out that this seems to run counter to what we've been saying all along, which is ein binyan bekelim, and how all of a sudden do we have Rav paskening here that this is called binyan, and they don't even seem to be discussing the overall fundamental issue, whether yesh binyan bekelim. I mean, the issue over here, according to Shmuel, does not seem to be a new idea. It's just one of these three, and he doesn't see this thing as being choshev enough to be an act of binyan. So Tosus over here makes a very important distinction, and he says the difference between this concept of ein binyan bekelim, which people take to mean that the idea of binyan is something that is attached to the ground like a building would be. That's not the point at all, says Tosfos. Because, look, I mean, we saw before that in the case of the bed that you have to put together by screwing the parts in, or the case of the menorah, shel tarsi, of the chulios. So we said over there that that is considered to be binyan. And therefore, there's got to be a different way to understand the idea of ein binyan bekelim. So Tosfos understands ein binyan bekelim is dafka on things that are being put together again, like the cases that we had over there, which we were discussing. Okay, so putting together something that was once a clear, it's meant to come apart. There we say ain't binyan bekelim, but when you're making something the first time, there would be a binyan bekelim, and that's not what we were talking about at all. If it's a true creative construction, why is construction of a model Beit HaMikdash that is on your tabletop fundamentally different than constructing the real Mishkan? Says Tosfos. So ultimately, the issue over here between Rav and Shmuel is not a function of binyan bekelim at all, but simply a question of whether does this small act of sticking something in just to hold in a handle, is that really considered to be as important as the idea of building something, or is it simply that you are completing whatever thing you're completing? And therefore, Shmuel says it in this case also that you would be chayev only because of Makeh Bepatish. Now, we have three cases. Why do we need three cases? Since they all seem to revolve around the same issue, Tzricha. Because let's say we only knew the one about the Misatet, the chiseling the stone. I would have said, okay, Rav in that case considers the chiseling of a stone to be part of Binyan because of his overall Yesod. That anything that you would be doing in order to accomplish a normal building is part of the building process, and therefore Derech binyan bekach. But, I mean, making a hole in the top of a chicken coop is certainly not part of the derech of binyan that you would be involved in when you're building a home. There you would be building a serious kind of door, window, or ventilation shafts. I mean, this is not the same thing as that. Maybe it doesn't qualify as real binyan. So maybe over there he would have been moda to Shmuel. Mashenkin, if in this case, let's see, we only had this case, I would say, Rav over here perhaps holds that this is similar to binyan. Why? Because it's not just preparing something for binyan. In reality, if I am making that hole at the top of the chicken coop, again, this is based on Tosfos' interpretation, if I'm making the hole on top of the chicken coop, then it cannot be seen as just an exit hole. It is basically a ventilation shaft because I expect to get fresh air in and stale air out. So why is that different fundamentally than a window? So if I've got a skylight, I'm certainly going to be chayav mishum binyan in a normal home. So this is nothing but a scaled down version of a skylight. Maybe that's why Rav says that it's considered to be doma l'binyan. But I mean, it's certainly not going to go so far as to say a shufta bekupina the maram. For God's sake, where does binyan have to do with sticking a peg into a hole? I mean, that's not derech binyan, is it? Maybe in that case it would be made to Shmuel that the only chiv that you would have over there would be because of makab patish, not for binyan. And on the other hand, yashmina baha, I would have said maybe Shmuel in this case says, look, I mean, this has no resemblance to binyan, and therefore you would be chayav only mishul makab patish. But maybe those other cases, maybe it would be made to Rav. Therefore, we need to have all the cases. Tosfos says even if you would put together case A and case C, you still wouldn't be necessarily able to derive all of the issues between Rav and Shmuel. Again, the Achronim discuss various approaches to why that's true, and I'm sure you could use your imagination to understand why each one of these cases adds a new facet to our understanding of the Machlokas, of what Rav considers to be binyan-like and what Shmuel holds to be not binyan-like. Now, he was not privy to the discussion we just had. So he asked Rabbi Yochanan, so what do you say? And Rabbi Yochanan takes his fist and he pounds it into his hand. Pow! So he's showing you Mishum Makeh B'Patish. And Rav Nosi Bar Hoshaya said, whoa. Doesn't it say beferish in the Mishnah, ha-misateit ve-ha-makeh be-patish? I don't get it. And so he was saying basically like Shmuel, we didn't ask this question before on Shmuel, but if you take a look at the Mishnah lists separately the misateit and the makeh be-patish. So how could you tell me the misateit is makeh be-patish? And Rabbi Yochanan explained to him that the meaning, the way to read the Mishnah is ha-misateit, that is to say, that is the way to understand the Mishnah. Then we have that question at the end of the Mishnah of, you know, literal makeh b'patish, taking the hammer and banging it. That itself would be a real makeh b'patish. Toshma. Okay, let's see whether that's true, because again, the Mishnah does not seem to corroborate this. It says, hakodeach kolshehu. Somebody drills a hole. Now, there's a big difference between no cave and kodeach, as Rashi points out. No cave means that you are putting something into the walls, right? So let's say you're putting up a picture hanger. If you put up the picture hanger, so then we would call that no cave, because that's the act. If I want to drill a hole, then obviously my purpose is not the hole. I mean, it's not the drilling the hole. My purpose is ultimately to, how do you say a dibble in English? I forget it, those anchors that you use for screws. But the simple ones, are they also called anchors? Yeah? Okay.
A raw plug.
What's it called in English? In English, England?
A raw plug. R-A-W plug.
Really? Okay.
Okay,
so every country's got its different word for dibble. I mean, it really sounds pretty dumb to call it a dibble, but around here they call it a dibble. Okay, so you drill this hole, and then you're going to put in something into the hole, and that's going to allow you to screw something into it. You're certainly not finishing anything by putting in a hole in the wall, are you? I mean, all you did was mess things up. You don't take it further than that. So when the Mishnah says over here any little bit of drilling is considered to be something, what in the heck is it? I mean, it can only be binyan, right? So it's not a makeh b'patish. It is not the final thing. So how could you be chayev? So the way that Rav was understanding that anything that you do that is part of a building process, including making a hole in a chicken coop, so then it would be very similar to that. Mirzei kamadachar churta levinyana would be similar to making, as the Gilyon HaShas points out, mikhze over here is a little bit misleading because it's mashma, it's really only derabonan, but obviously that's not what the Mishnah is saying. Normally mikhze means it looks like, but it really isn't. But over here, the concept of mikhze is, okay, how would you view this? You would view it as being part of what you're doing in order to build. I mean, if you're telling me that if you make a vent exit, that's considered to be building. So I understand that I view this in the same way. I'm drilling the hole as part of what I need to do for this building. But how in the world is Shmuel going to be including this in the Chiyuvim if he holds that these type of things are not choshev enough to be called binyan? They're only chayav because of makeh b'patish. Then wouldn't you say that by definition, drilling a hole as opposed to no cave is never the final step. And if it's not the final step, you're going to still have to go and screw something in. So then how could you be chayav mishum makir b'patish? Lav gemar melacha, who asked the gemar according to Shmuel, so there would be no way to be mechayav it at all. Shmuel's going to have to say that this guy, basically, he's not very good at carpentry, okay? So what he's doing, he doesn't have a drill. Okay, so when you don't have a drill, what you hope for, and of course what lies behind many people's pictures on the wall are a series of little holes and broken plaster. Okay, so what you hope for is that as I bang this nail into the wall, it's actually going to hold. Okay, so in that case, it's talking about the Baze Baramtsu de Parzla. You used a cement nail. Vishafka Begavayan, unbelievably, it actually went in and it stayed there. And he leaves it there, in which case, says Shmuel, that would be a case of Makir B'Patish. Now, come on, it's pretty rare, right? So the Mishnah's got to tell you that that's considered to be a Gemar Malacha. Pretty big of a stretch, according to Shmuel, I would say. How? Because, I mean, generally, that's not what Kodeach would mean. Zeh klal. Okay, then the Mishnah ends up saying, okay, this is the klal. It has to be something where the malacha that you would do would be a malacha that is mitkayemet. Now, what this raises, and we're going to be talking again about this later, this raises the issue of you do things which may be long processes, and you do them in steps. And this was something we talked about, like what was your plan? What were you going to carry out? Which we're going to be discussing at length. So each step of that plan, you're not going to do something that's going to fall apart when you leave it. You have to do sufficiently that it would be mitkayemet, right? And it's, if you're doing something that is going to be mitkayemet as part of an overall malacha, the chiddush over here is that that could also be called a malacha, even though we would see it as a part of a greater malacha in which the job is not complete. So, like, what would you include? What would be the chiddush in that kind of thing? So, let's say you've got a block of wood that is meant to be completed as a shear of one kav. It holds one kav of material. Now, you didn't get a chance to do the whole kav. So what you do is you figure, okay, you know what? Meanwhile, I'm going to put a kapiza, which is a three-quarter of a kav. I'll put a kapiza into this wood, and it can always be hollowed out further in order to contain a complete kav. So you carefully make a kapiza that contains exactly three-quarters of a kav. Now, a kapiza is of itself a usable measurement. Therefore, we view it as mitkayemet miatzmo. It is something that even though the plan is to finish, it would still be considered to be chayev because people do make kapizas. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, even the case of makeh b'kurnas al asadan, if it's b'sha'at melacha, all you do is you banged your sledgehammer on the anvil without doing anything. Well, that's what it says. It says, b'sha'at melacha. I mean, I happened to be working, and I banged the sledgehammer. How exactly is that a melacha? Micah of it. What in the world is the guy doing if he's just banging a hammer? So Rambam Rav Yosef Damar Tavaya, well, basically you need to get into, as we say in English, the swing of things, which is based on this Gemara. The swing of things is you're swinging your hammer, and in order to get the correct kind of pressure in your hand, to get used to it, to get into the swing of things, it's amazing it became an actual way of referring to a state of psychological flow even, is makeh b'patish. And that would be how we would look at it according to the way we're understanding Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Liba d'Rabba and Rav Yosef. Kosher b'rachova, I mean, come on. What are you getting into the swing of things? You're telling me that if I attend a course on baking on Shabbos, and I learn how to do baking, and I move my hand in such a way that I get used to doing proper sifting and so on. Are you trying to tell me I'm going to be chayev achil Shabbos because I'm moving my hand? That's crazy. A guy goes to a course. He's watching some expert goy doing all of these things on Shabbos, and he learns how to do it. You're going to tell he's chayev, even though he didn't do a darn thing? That's crazy. How could you possibly tell me that makeh b'korn is because you happen to be doing other malachas, and this gets you into the swing of things, that that becomes an actual part of malacha? That's wild. I can't believe it. Ela abaye v'rava d'amre tarvayu. The meaning of the what it is Rav Gamliel is saying is that sometimes, as part of what you are doing, you actually need to make certain that your tools are in a state that will allow you to do it. And because of that, what you do is, since in the Mishkan, Shekein Mirad, Dei Tasei Mishkan Osim Kein, in the Mishkan, remember that one of the most difficult things was the formation of the threads out of gold. How in the world do you make threads out of gold? So as the Pasuk explains it, they were meradei de tasim. So they had to, which is very, very difficult. I mean, nowadays you've got extremely high level technology to make sure that you could actually come out with a sheet of aluminum foil, which we take for granted. Imagine what it would have taken to create a sheet of aluminum foil when you don't have high pressure and high temperature rollers and so on. It's inconceivable. You'd have to actually take a piece of metal and bang on it in such a way that it gets the same type of smooth, it's impossible to conceive of almost, right? So in order to be able to do that, the slightest variation in the hammer or the anvil that you're banging with is simply going to cause a tear in the thin foil that you're making. And therefore, every time you're banging on a piece of foil, or every few strokes, you're going to have to take out the foil, make sure that the hammer and the anvil have not been in any way, even, I mean, you're talking about over here, you know, in modern terms, you're talking literally about things that are technically capable of dealing with microns of difference. And you know, obviously, you can't do that level, but what you can do is you can bang carefully with the hammer on the anvil to make sure that they are as smooth as possible without anything between them. And then you can put the piece of metal between them again and take another couple of bangs. Rashi has an interesting side note in which he said that he saw in his city, he saw people that work on Barnea's kind of thing, you know, selling coins and stuff like that. So the people that have matbea, he saw them doing this. He saw them banging a little bit on the metal and then banging the hammer to make sure that it was flat in order to be able to take another stroke. So that this is clearly something that metal workers would be used to. Tanya Nami Hachi, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Af Hamakeh B'Kurnas Ala Sadan B'Sha'at Melacha Chayav. And here, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel himself explains himself in the Braita exactly the way that Abaye Rava were able to be zocher to see his pshat. Shekein Meradadei Tasei Mishkan Osim Kein, because that was part of the actual melacha of creating a foil.